Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions. These are people who have been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with spinal champion Abby W. Abby is a retired kindergarten teacher who experienced continued spinal problems after a car accident in 2002. Physical therapy helped her journey, but she eventually needed surgery and experienced setbacks while trying to maintain her active lifestyle and keep up with her young students. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Abby's story. When Abby was 49, a pickup truck slammed into the back of her car, which led her to hit the car in front of her. She was thrown both forward and backward.
I remember that night very well. It was raining and I was stopped behind a car that was waiting to make a left-hand turn. I looked into my rearview mirror and I was shocked to see a pickup truck coming very fast up behind me before it crashed into me.
Unfortunately, this accident was the start of Abby's lower back issues. She was initially treated with physical therapy.
My doctor prescribed PT, which I did twice a week for at least 6 months. Over time, my back improved, but my back pain never really went away.
Flashing forward to over 10 years later, at the age of 61, Abby started working with a personal trainer at the Y. It was a great experience. Through this training, she was getting stronger.
By January 2015, I was doing a Tabata interval training session with my personal trainer that involved deep squats while leaning back, holding onto long straps with hand grips. I did several repetitions, but after coming out of one of them, I knew something had happened in my lower back, and it was very painful.
By April, Abby was prescribed more PT, but she wasn't improving like she had before. She was prescribed pain management injections, which also did not help her pain levels. Finally, in May, she had an MRI.
I was referred to an orthopedic surgeon who specialized in minimally invasive robotic spine surgery. The surgeon diagnosed me with significant osteoarthritis at L4, L5, and S1. Based on this diagnosis, my surgeon felt I was a good candidate for a laminectomy and a foraminotomy.
In October of 2015, Abby had the outpatient surgery. She jumped back into more physical therapy twice a week for the first month, followed by once a week for all of December. Luckily, she recovered and only had minimal pain after doing more strenuous activities. Unfortunately, she was not able to sit on the floor with her young students, crisscross applesauce style, as she was used to doing.
By the summer of 2016, another surprise occurred. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis after beginning to have tremendous pain in my hands, and they were swollen. They looked almost like balloons. I was given several medications as treatment, and it has worked very well for me. It wasn't until January 2017 that I started to experience back pain again. The lower back pain continued to increase during that spring.
By the summer of 2017, Abby said goodbye to her 39-year career teaching and started her retirement. She was tasked with packing up 39 years of classroom supplies, which was no easy task. This involved lots of bending, twisting, and lifting of boxes of materials and books to get her classroom cleared out.
I was in a great deal of pain over that summer. In early September, at a follow-up appointment with my rheumatologist, an X-ray revealed that my L4 vertebrae was out of alignment. This led to another MRI, and my surgeon recommended a spinal fusion at L4 and L5.
In January of 2018, Abby had the fusion. Her recovery was slower than her previous surgery, and she continued to be in pain. By May of that year, she was still in pain. Something still wasn't right. Another MRI in May of that year showed a ruptured disc between L5 and S1. She was in need of a discectomy and had to have it done in July. Recoveries for both of these surgeries were very long. It took time for the pain to decrease, which was frustrating. At PT, it was recommended that Abby start walking any amount of distance. At that time, 15 minutes of walking was her goal. She could only walk very slowly.
Over that year, I gained a lot of weight due to not being able to be active. By spring of 2019, I began to be able to do more with less pain. I was encouraged by my PT to walk longer and farther. I joined a weight loss and health improvement program at the end of April. After a lot of work, things really started to improve, and I began to feel like my healthy self again. Today, I continue PT work, focusing on core strengthening and my posture. I was able to lose 49 pounds, and I walk between 3 and 5 miles every day. I finally got my life back.
Wow! I'm so amazed with your story. It's awesome.
Thanks. I'm really happy too.
That's fantastic. Gosh. Okay. Abby, you walked quite a journey. Thank you for sharing your story so that others may have hope. I know there must be other teachers listening. I'm imagining little kindergartners and how active they are, and I'm sure they didn't understand that you were having pain. Being in a career that involved a lot of moving, sitting, standing, getting up and down, what did your day-to-day of managing your pain look like for the many years that you had persistent pain while being a teacher?
I had to really rethink how I was going to be moving in my classroom throughout the day. My wonderful PT was a great resource in adapting how I could do what I needed to do when teaching. Some of the suggestions included sitting on a swiveling stool with a cushioned seat so that if I needed to twist, I would not have to twist. I could just swivel. And that worked great. I could use it at the tables. I could use it when I was doing a whole group lesson. Using two thick cushions was another suggestion that he had. He was recommending the kind of cushions you'd see on an outdoor chair, stacked on top of each other so that I could sit down on the floor, but I would be keeping my hips above my knees to take off the stress on my lower back. Another suggestion he had was using a gardening cushion to kneel next to the child instead of bending over like I always had in the past. He also recommended whenever my kiddos were not in my classroom that I lie on my back, pull my knees up, hug them to my chest, and just gently rock back and forth, which helped to relax my lower back and kind of make more space.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that that very simple exercise can do is not only help with the vertebral bodies being more agile, you know, as the joints move, but also the soft tissue, you know, the ligaments and muscles that surround your spine. So you sort of get, you know, two for one in that stretch. It's a great stretch. It really does help.
I still do it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, interesting, even after a fusion, you can still do that stretch, which is great.
Yeah.
It's great news.
It is great news.
Yeah. Yeah. Abby, you mentioned a lot about your arthritis here. So at first you had plain old run-of-the-mill osteoarthritis, which everybody gets over time. But then along your journey, you were also diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which is a special kind of arthritis and an autoimmune condition. Can you talk to us a little bit about how the arthritis impacted your patient journey and maybe some other things you'd like patients to know? You know, you were given some treatments and you said that the treatments for your RA worked really well.
Right.
Were you surprised by that? And how did that impact your experience?
Well, at first they put me on methotrexate, Plaquenil, and folic acid. And after a year, the rheumatologist noticed some slight changes in the bones in my feet. So he decided it was time to start an infusion of a drug called Aria Symphony. And that has been amazing. So I go every 8 weeks for an infusion, and I don't have any rheumatoid pain.
That's amazing. Congratulations. That's fantastic. And that's just something you're going to live with, right? I mean, you'll just,
yeah.
That will just be something to manage and to do.
With the goal of not having damage to my joints.
Right, right. I'm curious, how did COVID impact that? Were you able to get your infusions on time?
Yes, I was. They were very, very safe. You waited in your car. They called you in. There was hand sanitizer everywhere. You wore a mask. They wore masks. I was in a room by myself.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the infusion room, but it didn't really matter. They were just trying to keep people apart.
Yeah. How long does an infusion take?
My infusion takes about an hour or a little more, depending on how many people are getting infusions at that same time. The actual infusion itself takes about a half an hour, but there's the whole putting the IV in and then taking it out and all that kind of stuff that adds up to more time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I'm so happy to know that there was no interruption of your treatment, you know, during COVID, and, you know, such huge kudos to our medical workers who, you know, kept us all going during this time.
The only thing that happened was I was scheduled for an infusion, and then I was supposed to have my first vaccine. Oh, sorry. No, it was my second vaccine. And we had a snowstorm, and they didn't get the vaccines. So they rescheduled me for the same day as my infusion, not thinking anything about it because I don't have any reaction when I have my infusion. And I didn't really have much of a reaction from the first shot. So I just went to my infusion. But when they found out I was having my shot that evening, they said they were not going to do it because there's some research shows that it can suppress the protection. So I went back the next week.
Yeah, that's a small hardship,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's wonderful that you got this incredibly successful treatment for your RA, because treatments affect different people in different ways. And that's a real blessing,
yeah,
that you're able to have success with that. That's wonderful. Abby, something people don't always talk about is weight gain and weight loss, and that the fluctuations in your body size and body weight can come with not being able to move properly. When you're in pain, you don't want to move and you're not as active. You experienced great weight loss on your journey to healing and recovery. And I'm so proud of you. That's so hard.
Well, thank you.
I'm really inspired by that. I just personally, I know how hard that is to do.
Yeah, it is.
It's hard work. What advice do you give to others who want to lose weight, but are going through treatments or experiencing pain? Talk to us a little bit about your weight loss journey.
I think one of the biggest things I had to do was have a new mindset about losing weight and see it as part of my journey to my recovery. It sounds like it's not that big a deal, but in my mind, it really changed things for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I started the weight loss program almost 2 years ago, and I'm now in the maintenance part of the program. I also learned that weight loss is not just about eating less, eating healthier, exercising, but it has a lot to do with your relationship with food and how you think about it. One aspect of the program is a big psychological aspect. They have lots of wonderful articles on helping you identify what your triggers are. How do you shift that thinking? It's a great, great program. Another huge thing was logging your food. I had done years ago another weight loss program where they didn't count the calories. You got points. And then you had all these 300 free foods. Well, all fruit was free food, no points. That I didn't do well with that. It does work for many people, and it had a lot of good aspects, but it did not work for me. But having to log my food into the app on my phone really amazed me to see how much each food had in terms of the calories. And it really helped me to think differently about what I was going to eat. And so that was a huge thing. I would say that as soon as I started that program, I guess my body was ready for it, but it just was very consistent, slow and steady, losing the weight.
That's the way to do it, right? I mean, I think every nutritionist and healthcare provider would say it's this slow and steady and modifications to your diet.
Yeah.
So, you know, and knowing how to make healthy choices, I think, you know, whether it's an app-based program or you're seeing, you know, a nutrition coach or a health coach, whatever it is that's going to work for you, paying attention to nutrition and eating is a really critical part of spine health. It's a critical part of your total wellness. I mean, it's just, you know, there are people who, you know, who believe that, you know, food is medicine, right? Our food is our medicine. And it's an area that's difficult to talk about because I think there are psychological aspects to eating and people's relationship with food and where you are in your life. Do you have a lot of kids around? Do you have, you know, triggers, you know, in your life that that make it hard for you to stick to a nutritional eating pattern? I think one thing that you're showing me today that I'm really moved by is that, you know, as an adult in retirement, you got almost 50 pounds off, and it's never too late. It's never too late to get healthy. You just get your life back.
And so it's impacted my life in so many ways. I didn't even think about it. And my PT pointed out, he said, when you were 49 pounds heavier, when you walked, your arms weren't swinging normally because you were wider. And so they were kind of curving. And that's terrible for your lower back.
Interesting.
I never even thought about it. So there's so many. He is amazing. And he educates me all along the way, which has helped greatly.
Yes, we love our good physical therapists, right? They are healers in many ways. And I'm so happy that you found a great physical therapist. There's so many wonderful physical therapists. We feature many of them on our spine health platforms and give people, you know, ideas on how to choose the right physical therapist for them. Do you have some advice on that, Abby? How do you find the right physical therapist?
I was lucky that my primary care physician knew of this physical therapist and referred him to me. And he's very hands-on. If I sit for too long or I've walked more than I should have on a day, he'll actually have me get into child's pose. Mm-hmm. And then as I come out of child pose, he's pulling in the opposite direction on my lower back and hips.
Doing a little traction on you there, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And then that, oh my gosh, it's amazing. So
That sounds so good. I could use some of that.
Sometimes I just say, can't we do that today?
Yeah, oh, that's great. So I think, you know, some of the things in finding a physical therapist, being referred by your doctor who you trust, you know, to someone who's reputable, and then having a good relationship. If you hit it off with somebody and you've got the rapport and you have a great relationship, I think those are some of the top criteria for identifying a physical therapist. Abby, I wanted to circle back to the very beginning of your story.
Okay.
And this is just a question that I'm thinking of as I'm thinking about your story. You had this horrible car accident that started this whole thing.
Right.
Did anybody at that time get imaging studies for you? Did you get x-rays of your back or MRIs of your back at that time?
I think I did because I was taken to the hospital in an ambulance.
Okay. So they did, yeah, they did the study. And so you started out, you know, with sort of physical therapy for your treatment for after the accident. But then at some point, you know, you had degeneration in your spine that required surgical intervention. What was it that really made you realize that things weren't working? And how long did it take you to get to that point?
Oh, it probably took several months when it really started ramping up. And it just was constant pain.
Yeah. I think one of the things that people often ask, and we hear, you know, people asking, is how do I know when it's something more serious? How do I know when it's not just a little bit of, you know, joint stiffness or you know, muscular tightness? How do I know when there might be something more serious going on? And I think that, you know, for you, the barometer sounds like, or the decision point was when the pain just wasn't getting any better.
Right. And when I went back to my primary care physician, he said, no, it's time to do something.
What was it like when you met a spine surgeon? What was that experience like?
He was great. He had, you know, the model of the spine right there, so he could show me exactly what he was going to do. He answered all of my questions. He patiently listened. It was a very positive experience. Very, very positive.
That's great. And I see your you know, when I asked you about meeting your spine surgeon, big smile came on your face as we're looking at each other on the screen. So that to me was an indication that was a good experience. And I think that's another question that we get a lot is how do I pick the right spine doctor for me? How do I know I'm in good hands? And again, part of that is the rapport, right? You just have a feeling about somebody, and you've got to trust trust your instincts and trust your feelings. And
right.
And if something doesn't feel right, then seek advice from another, you know, a different provider, because there are choices generally, you know, in most parts of our country. And so you've just got to have a relationship with somebody who you trust, who you like, spends time with you, answers your questions.
And for me, I'm a pleaser. I don't like any confrontation. So if I hadn't had my primary care physician right there helping me make that decision of where to go, and him being sure that I would have a good experience with this doctor, if I hadn't liked him, I don't know if I would have said anything. I'm not to him, but I don't know. I might just have gone along with it just because I don't like confrontation.
Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of people are like that, Abby. I don't think you're alone in that. And one of the things that we advocate for in the foundation is to say, don't be afraid to get a second opinion. This is a really big deal. You have one spine.
Right.
And you know, you got to get it right. And so if you have any hesitation at all, there is nothing wrong with going to see another doctor. And generally, you know, I sort of always felt like, oh, they're going to tell each other. They're going to know that I went to, and they don't. They don't have time for that. And even if they did, that's just a person educating themselves on what their choices are and what their options are, and getting a lay of the land of that field of medicine.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. And we've got a program on our Spine Talks platform with some of the nation's very top spine surgeons all saying, get a second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If any doctor is offended that you got a second opinion, that's probably not a doctor that you want to have.
Right.
But I think many of us we think it's going to take too long. It's too much time. It's a hassle. And we just want to get it done and get it over with. And that's okay too, if you feel like you're in the right hands. But
right.
I think if you feel like there's any hesitancy or any hesitation, take a little extra time to make sure you're in the right place for you. And that's something that we advocate to people all the time.
And that's good, because a lot of times it's very intimidating to go to these brilliant, amazing doctors.
Yes.
And you feel like, well, I don't really know, because I never been here before.
That's right. It is scary because it's your spine. and the, you know, the pain and the debilitating nature of spine pain is, you know, it's isolating, it's depressing, it's, it keeps you away from your life, and it's a big deal. And one of the things that we are doing here at the foundation is letting people know that it is a journey and you can get there and you don't have to feel alone. You don't have to feel isolated, and there's hope. And that's what we're doing today and talking with you, Abby, and sharing your story. Your story went on for years, but you did not give up on yourself.
I tried not to.
Yeah, you just persevere with that.
One thing that I remember before I went into the operating room for the first surgery, my doctor came out and I was, you know, on the gurney. He came out and he had me lean over and he put a little mark on my back. And then he put his hands on my leg and he said, "Abigail, I'm going to get you out of pain." It was just, no doctor had ever done anything quite like that before.
Wow. That's amazing.
He's a really special man.
Yeah. Gosh, lucky you. That's fantastic. Oh, I'm so moved by that. It's incredible.
I didn't expect that. I mean, not that he hadn't been really warm and friendly before, but just added that extra touch.
Yeah. And you know, that makes me think of a study that that we've been involved in at the National Spine Health Foundation, a study called Patient Expectations. And one of the things that the data is showing us is that when doctors take the time preoperatively to talk with their patients about what to expect in the outcome of their surgery, patients actually do better.
Oh, yeah.
And there's and we have the data to prove that if you have an expectation of how your life is going to be after your surgery, you generally get there. And that's amazing, right?
Yeah.
It's like a mind over matter thing, but also you're in the right hands. You're in a capable surgeon's hands. He knows what to do. He's got the right approach, the right treatment for you. You have an expectation that you're going to be better, and it happens.
Wow.
It's all about the connection. That's amazing. I have so enjoyed talking with you today, Abby, and congratulations on being a spinal champion.
Oh, thank you.
Such an incredible journey. I think you give hope to so many people by sharing your story. I'm so appreciative of you coming on our podcast today.
This has actually been really fun. I don't know why I was nervous.
It's scary if you've never done it before, but you're a natural. You've done great.
Thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Been wonderful. Great. We hope to continue to stay in touch with you and have you be part of our community, and just so thrilled to know you. And you know, we're rooting for you to continue with good spine health. So check us out. Keep us in mind. And
I've been listening to your podcasts on my walks.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And there's so much on your website, and I've shared it with my PT, my yoga teacher, all my friends who have back issues, and they were blown away by what you offer on that website.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being part of it. You're going to be on the website now too.
Okay.
All right.
It'll be fun.
It's going to be great. Oh. It's going to be great. Well, thank you, Abby. Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
So inspired by you. I'm so moved. It's all good. And despite, you know, rheumatoid arthritis is in your life now. I mean, despite various challenges that you've had, you're just doing awesome. And that's so inspiring.
It's a joy. Even in a pandemic.
Even in a pandemic, because you're out of pain.
Right. Exactly.
It's great. Life is good. I love that. What a great note to end on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Abby.
Thank you too, Rita.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of Spinal Champion recovery and to access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening. The content and views expressed on the Get Back to It podcast are for information purposes and should not be used as a substitute for professional medical advice. To read our full disclaimer, visit spinehealth.org.